This morning we're looking in the book of Proverbs, and we're looking in a topical way at what Solomon has to say about friendship. And I want you to take your Bibles and look at this old and yet radically contemporary issue. I want to set a rather more modern context to it, and then this morning I'm going to have us read. I will read a whole lot of verses that talk about aspects of what it means to be a friend. This is particularly important for me because one of the things I observe in the latter part of the 20th century, particularly among people who are 30 years of age and under, is their desperate search for and need for friendship. One person in analyzing this particular generational culture has heard these words spoken of folk who are under 30. The past is beyond reach. The present is black and bleak. The future is a brick wall. I don't know if you listen carefully to contemporary culture, not Christian culture, but contemporary culture. Underneath all the frenetic activity, there's a recognition that this generation that's emerging into adulthood recognizes very carefully that they will make less money in their lifetime than their parents have. This generation, compared to their parents' generation, will experience much more in the way of broken homes and divorced marriages. This generation no longer believes in the same things that folks who are 40 and older believe. Among other things, this generation says that the world as we know it is not user-friendly. The world as we know it is not simple, but overwhelmingly complex. The world as we know it has no rules. Therefore, why invest in it? I want to suggest that given the nature of those kind of comments, the worst thing you can do to someone who exhibits that kind of behavior is give them a list of principles or truth. Rather, what this culture looks for desperately are people who are willing to be friends. Hence, what Solomon talks about in the book of Proverbs becomes the key gateway to reaching the younger generation for the cause of Jesus Christ. Therefore, the Proverbs that I'm asking us to look at, I want you to look at in a totally different way. These are not words for 10th century BC Israel. These are words for the latter part of the 20th century America. So take your Bibles, will you? And I'm asking you to think carefully about what your relationship quotient is. The first text we look at is Proverbs chapter 11, verse 13. Proverbs 11, 13. I'm going to go rather quickly this morning. Hold on to your seat belts. We're going quickly this morning, and I'm asking myself a question. I'm asking you a question. What sort of friend are you? Proverbs 11:13 says, "A gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy man keeps a secret. Wise people, therefore, according to this proverb, keep their mouths shut. In the age of spin and half-truths, those who keep confidences are the essence of those who are friends. Therefore, the positive nature of this proverb is that a true friend keeps confidences." I have a friend that's like that. I can tell him things, and I know that he'll keep it close to his chest, not tell anyone else. Do you have friends like that? The second one is the next chapter over, chapter 12, verse 26. Fascinating proverb. A righteous man is cautious in friendship, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. Now, if you put the two contrasting things together, you understand the word cautious. It has to do with cautious in the sense of giving direction or advice. That understand that friendships, true friendships, are those of people who value association before analysis. They value relationship before giving recipes to life. Therefore, a true friend is someone who is careful in giving advice until they know that there's some kind of relational bond there. I have a friend that loves to do that as well. He's always seeking to reassure me before he redirects me. Are you that sort of friend? Yes? No? Third one, Proverbs 13, verse 10. I want you to read this aloud with me. Proverbs 13, verse 10. Together, pride only breeds quarrels, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. Oh, painful stuff for me. I love to argue, because of course I'm always right. And it's my job to let you all know that. But this proverb says that it's an inflated opinion of oneself that breeds quarrels. True friends, rather, are those who are open to new ideas. They reserve judgment and are willing to change in the light of new information. As the Indian proverb says, they're willing to go a mile in their moccasins before telling you how to walk in yours. Are you that sort of friend? I have a friend that's like that. That friend's wonderful. He walks with me a lot. Very reluctant to give me advice. The next one's Proverbs 16, verse 28. Proverbs 16, verse 28. If a good friend takes advice and gives it humbly, wisdom is found, according to the previous proverb, in giving and taking advice. Look at this one, Proverbs 16, 28. A perverse man stirs up dissension. A gossip separates true friends. Now, it's interesting that the word gossip in this particular text is only mentioned in two other sections in the book of Proverbs, chapter 18, verse 8, and chapter 26, in verses 20 and 22. But the essential element of this is that when someone shares something that has otherwise been given in confidence or in secret, what it does is it has the devastating effect of separating friendships. How does that happen? Well, it happens because somewhere along the line, the truth will leak out. Recently at Congress, I went to a workshop taught by a pediatrician from Yale, and her thesis was that a lie is a landmine that you set and you never know when it's going to go off. Oh, that's powerful, isn't it? When someone betrays a confidence, when is asked to hold something quiet, and then you let it go, you betray something, you separate close friends. The classic illustration of this, pardon me for lapsing into my former life as an English teacher, is found in the Shakespearean drama Othello. Some of you haven't read it. Probably most of you haven't read it. Spare yourself the grief and don't read it. But understand what Shakespeare's saying. Here is a king, Iago, who listens to bad advice, and it prejudices his marriage and his whole kingdom. Therefore, the positive element of this is a true friend works toward unity. Doesn't do things that separate close friends, but someone who brings people together to work as a team. I have a friend that's like that. He works night and day, attempting to bring people together to work together in harmony. Do you have friends like that? Proverbs 17, verse 9. Flip over the next chapter. Fascinating proverb here about friendship. He who covers over an offense promotes love, but whoever repeats the matter separates close friends. Note it's parallel to the one we just read. But understand what's not being suggested here. The person that covers over an offense and promotes love doesn't mean that that person is ignoring evil or trying to move on in spite of it or trying to make up for it. But rather the context of the proverb seems to indicate that what that friend does is create an environment within which evil can be protected and a person can come to confession of it. Do you understand that oftentimes when you wrong someone that what you really are looking for is to be able to be forgiven and restored? Now, if you harbor the grudge, I'm never going to forgive that person, then you make it harder for reconciliation to occur. I tend to find myself on that sort of thing when I get involved in crisis marriage counseling. When that happens, what happens is usually things have been boiling under the surface for years. And finally there's this explosion. And the two parties start to spew things out of their guts that are terrible. The best thing I can do, and by way of advice, is just be quiet. Because then the possibility of ever being able to be heard will be blown apart. So it says, he who covers over protects people when they give offense, promotes love, creates the conditions within which friends can come back together again, if you look at the second half of the proverb. So, people, has someone wronged you? If you can't raise your hand involuntarily, then I don't know what world you live in. All of us are wronged somewhere along the way. How we respond to the offense? By trying to protect, cover, not let everybody else know. Do you know what that person did? Creates the environment within which God can work and ultimately reconciliation can occur. Let's move on. Chapter 18, verse 1. Let's read it together. Chapter 18, verse 1. Ready? An unfriendly man pursues selfish ends. He defies all sound judgment. Actually, I like this one in the King James Version even better. It goes this way. He who separateth himself. Isn't that fascinating? It means somewhere along the line that someone who works selfishly is actually working, actually pulling himself apart. In other words, a person who is unfriendly is actually living for themselves, and that defies all sound judgment. Isn't that a fascinating statement about friendship? It means that if you're only into it for yourself, you're schizophrenic. Now, our culture tends to preach exactly the opposite. You need to look out for yourself. If you don't, who will? But Solomon says that if you're friendly, you're doing things that care for you. Why? Because God has made us relational beings. He wants us to live in social relationships. Are you friendly or unfriendly? It's been a kind of project of mine to try and be more friendly. I'm a rather dour sort. It's very easy for me to be in my own world. And I find what's fascinating is that there are people all around my world who are looking for a friendly face. I find them at the checkout counters at Walmart. I find them in the maintenance men at Connecticut College Pool. University campuses are big places for that because folk who walk around there with PH something or others are people who have big inflated opinions of themselves. And oftentimes it's the people who actually do the physical work that are most important. So I've gotten friendly with some of those people. It's a wonderful thing. An unfriendly man pursues selfish ends. How would people look at you today? I have a friend. He's virtually unselfish. Has no even concept of self. Always seeking to do things for me. Do you have some of those kind of friends? Do you have a friend like that? Next one, Proverbs 18, chapter, verse 18, verse 24. Another fascinating proverb on friendship. It says, a man of many companions, many friends, may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Listen to the literal Hebrew of this text, the first line. It says, a man of friends to be shattered. The verb isn't even in the text. The sense of it works something like this. If you have a lot of friends, then they're probably all shallow. Now understand what's being said in contrasting to the one just before. It doesn't mean you should be unfriendly, but it says that true friendship consists in close and long-term friends. So the question is, do I have a circle, an inner circle of friends who I am known by and know me intimately? Or do I have many acquaintances, none of whom know the deep insides of my life? A true friend is someone who is a friendly person to everyone, but has close and deep and long-lasting friendships. Look at the nature of your life over the last 20, 30, 40 years. Who are your friends? Is there someone you can go to and pray with in a heartbeat like that? Those folk are valuable. I've got a friend like that. He stays with me through thick and thin. I can talk to him almost any time of the day or night if I choose to. Do you have a friend like that? The next one, Proverbs 19, verse 11. Fascinating proverb. A man's wisdom gives him patience. It is his glory to overlook an offense. The New American Standard Version has it this way. A man's wisdom makes him slow to anger. Therefore, in terms of friendship, then, a true friend is someone who's patient, who is slow to anger. And as a result of that, it's his glory to overlook an offense. Now understand that what's being said here is all of us sometimes wrong people. We offend them. And it's being able to understand what's important versus what's trivial. Happened to me yesterday morning. I get so desperate for pancakes on Saturday morning, I don't cook them long enough. The middle of the last two were virtually, like, you could see the egg running in the middle of them, you know. My wife is long-suffering, so when she cut into them and realized they weren't cooked, she let me know. And then she said, here, you have them. But you know what's wonderful about my wife? She doesn't hold it against me. Except she says that from now on she'll cook the pancakes. You know how that works. She overlooks it and makes for something better. I wonder, what's the attitude that you have toward others? Would people see you as friends of being people who are able to overlook the small potatoes, so to speak? Or are you irritated by every little thing? Patient with friends. Proverbs 20, verse 3. Let's read it together. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 3. You with me? Let's go. It is a man's honor to avoid strife, but every fool is quick to quarrel. You've heard this before, haven't you? Do you understand what Solomon does? If you didn't catch it the first go-round, he repeats it again. Do you ask questions first? One of the interesting characteristics that linguists have picked up about people who are under 30 is a phenomenon called the interrogative imperative. Basically, what folks do, younger folks do, is they give you commands in the way of questions. Would you like to go with the mall? And what's being implied is, I want you to go to the mall. Listen carefully, and I'm speaking mostly to those of my generation, listen carefully to the speech of younger people, and they almost never command each other to do something. They always ask questions. And the questions are meant to solicit and get connection by which they let their opinions be known. It's called the interrogative imperative. I find it linguistically a fascinating way to seek connection before giving command. So is it any wonder that the older generation, when they come across and say, you shall do this, you blow them out of the water? And they're saying, Mom, Dad, do you really think that that's cool? And what they're trying to tell you is, you're uncool, friends. This particular command, this particular proverb, says that it's a man's honor to avoid strife, but every fool is quick to quarrel. Proverbs 20, verse 19. Look at it with me. It's been said again. Although the word here is a little different. The verse says, a gossip betrays a confidence, so avoid a man who talks too much. Unfortunate translation of the word. The word gossip here is the word babbler. Someone who talks on and on and on. Okay. Avoid folk who talk too much. I have a friend. He listens incredibly well to me. Do you have a friend like that? I do. Often very reluctant to tell me what's going on. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 11. Proverbs 22, 11. He who loves a pure heart and whose speech is gracious will have the king for his friend. This characteristic of friendship is that they have pure motives toward others versus political or personal agendas. In other words, when they enter into conversation with folk, they're into it for essential purity. They're not into it to see what they can get out of the friendship. They're seeking to help people grow, not use people for themselves. The great need of people in leadership is for friends who speak gently and graciously with unmixed motives. Do you understand that? If you have ever had been involved in a large group, if leadership of any sort, you realize how valuable it is to have people within that situation who will give you the truth graciously and are not doing it for their own selves. You can kind of psych those people out. I've got a friend who speaks to me graciously, with my best interest at heart all the time. Do you have a friend like that? Proverbs chapter 22, verses 24 and 25. I'll read it. You follow along. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn his ways and get yourself ensnared. Do you understand the big lesson of this? And of course, it's picked up in all sorts of other proverbs that Solomon gives us, is that we are influenced by the people we associate with. That's one of the reasons why if you have children who are entering into teenage years, your principal concern ought not to be the music they listen to, the TV they watch, the games they play, but who they associate with. All those things follow from the nature of the peer group. So it's your first priority as a parent of young people to find out who your kids' friends are. You need to become friends with those friends. Because the lesson is that if you make friends with someone, for example, who's hot-tempered, then that's the kind of behavior you learn. So the positive thing on this is good friends are calm and cool in every situation. I've got a friend who's calm and cool. No matter how hot and bothered I am, this friend is, he's utterly unflappable. I have a friend exactly like that. Note what's not being said in the text. It's not being said that it's not, that you never gets angry. In fact, one of the things that's said is it's okay to be angry as long as we don't sin, Ephesians 4. But one of the things that's true about anger is that if it's left unresolved, it gives a foothold opportunity for the devil to come into your life. There's a certain sense in which when I fly into a rage, whether it's justified or not, I'm open to kind of the influence of the evil one. There are times to get righteously angry. But I need not to sin in that, and I need to resolve it, particularly with people who are close to me, before the sun goes down. Because unresolved anger becomes a cancer of the soul. Good friends are calm and cool in all circumstances. Proverbs chapter 23, verses 6 to 8. Read this along with me. Read it out loud with me. Proverbs 23, verses 6 to 8. Together. Do not eat the food of a stingy man. Do not crave his delicacies. For he is the kind of man who is always thinking about the cost. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you. You will vomit up the little you have eaten and will have wasted your compliments. Ooh, this is painful. The positive issue is that a good friend is generous and not worried about money, particularly when it comes to friendships. He doesn't make an economic matter out of friendships. I'm always slightly worried when I associate with certain people who their concern is the bottom line. Are you a person who is generous to the fault of being expansive? I have a friend who would give me almost anything I ask for. Cost is no obstacle. This friend is even so amazing that he's even willing to give me his own life if I ask. In fact, some of you who are following along realize that he has. True friends are generous. Proverbs 25, verses 9 and 10. If you argue your case with a neighbor, do not betray another man's confidence, or he who hears it may shame you, and you will never lose your bad reputation. You understand what's being said here, friends? This is a pithy proverb. This is wonderful. It bears some real meditation and thought about it. It says that in making a case, in making an argument about any particular transaction, it's good to argue the case with the truth of the matter and don't use foibles, weaknesses, or personal attacks against others to bolster your argument. You know how easy it is to do that. I'm a Red Sox fan. How can you be a Red Sox fan? Well, I'm a Red Sox fan because my, you know, so-and-so is a Yankees fan, and he's a lousy person. Let me tell you what he did. Anybody who did that can't be a good, he has to really be a Red Sox fan. In other words, we use ad hominem attacks. We don't bolster our argument on the facts of the matter, but we bring in things we know that are bad about others to make us look good. Now what happens when my friend hears what I've said about him to the person? He'll say, my goodness, reputation, down the tubes. It's hard to recover one's reputation in that circumstance. Such that people who keep their tongue and don't attack others are always appear to be somewhat stodgy and defensive. It's one of the occupational hazards of keeping a confidence. If you don't justify yourself, our culture tends to make you out to be guilty. It's the way life is. It says, make your case, but don't do it at your brother's expense. True friends are objective. They're not political in their argumentation. They don't attack persons. Proverbs 26, verses 18 and 19. I want you to read this one out loud together with me. Proverbs 26, verses 18 and 19. Together? Like a madman shooting firebrands or deadly arrows is a man who deceives his neighbor and says, oh, has this ever happened to you? You know, what's being said here, friends, is that people understand the context of situations. They're sensitive to feelings. And sometimes we love to do things, I really didn't mean it. But you said, no, I was just joking. There's an essential truth that people who are true friends are sensitive and appropriate with their humor. Humor has the great capacity either to cut or to bring together. Humor has the ability to be destructive or to be delightful. Early on in our marriage, Joanne was very helpful to me in letting me know that a lot of my humor was at the expense of other people. Don't you realize that when you use those kind of remarks, you put yourself up and you put others down? So it's been one of the things that's been attempting to help me is that if I make a humorous comment, I try and do it at my own expense. That's why I know I have the teens with me if they joke about my lack of hair, because now I know I suckered them in, because I joke about it all the time. I want them to be comfortable with me. And if they all of a sudden say, oh, Bob, it's too glary, you know, like that, I know I've got them. It bears a great deal of insight, friends. A little bit of confession. What's the nature of your joking life? Do you do it to bring people together or to separate folk? Proverbs 26, verse 21. A true friend works toward peace, it says there in this particular proverb, as charcoal to embers, and so wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man for kindling strife. You get the point? Fire, embers need fuel. Quarrelsome people allow strife to go on. If you don't fight, there's no fight. True friends work toward peace. I've got a friend, he's a peacemaker. In fact, he at one point in his life with me told me that I'm blessed if I also follow in his footsteps that way. So, do you work for peace? Or do you seek to keep the quarrel going? Proverbs chapter 27, verse 6. 27, verse 6. The wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. Some of you know that, don't you? I have a friend. This is really a friend I talk to on the phone. And I have to listen real carefully because typically I have no clue when he's criticizing me until after I get off the phone with him. He is so gentle that oftentimes the direction that I hear from him comes by the way he prays for me when we finish our conversations. And so a couple, 5, 10 minutes or a half a day later, I'll realize, oh my goodness, that's what he wanted me to understand. Those wounds cut deep to my soul because he's my friend. Someone who criticizes outside the context of relationship, I've learned just to let it go. But someone who criticizes from within the context of friendship, that's a valuable friend. So therefore, true friends correct within the context of relationship. Do you have a friend like that? Someone who you know loves you so much that when they give any kind of counsel, any kind of wounding, it hurts you to the core, but you know that they're going to be around to hold you together. They are true surgeons of the soul. They cut, but right after the cutting, they're there to stitch up. Proverbs 27, verse 9, a couple verses down. Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of one's friend springs from his earnest counsel. I want to put it, true friends are pleasant to be around. Are you fun to be with? Or when folks see you coming, do they say, oh, there's another problem to deal with? Proverbs 27, verse 17. A most famous thing. Iron, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. I've asked myself this question. When I meet with close friends, what do I bring to the table? What thing of interest, of experience, of attitude, or whatever, can I bring to the friendship that help them become a better person? Sometimes I'm actually so weary in the context that if I'm going to go out to dinner, I go, all right, Lord, what have I done? What's happened that I can encourage them with? Actually plan it out, you see, because I'm so dense in this issue of friendship. It's one of the areas God's working with me on. I'd much rather read a book than be with people sometimes. So I have to consciously work on it. But this particular friendship says that people who sharpen each other are like iron sharpening iron. They equip them for battle or for usefulness. Do I have a fresh word from the Lord? Do I have an insight in life? What have I learned that I can go? When you drink coffee with each other in the next half hour, and as you talk to people, do you have something new and fresh to give them that encourages them? It may be something that somebody wrote 500 years ago, but you just read it for the first time, and you can say, just listen to what God told me today. Or maybe even better, in our reading of all these Proverbs, something has struck you like that, and it may have been nothing to what I've said. And all of a sudden, God's speaking to you, and it's over the coffee, you say, oh, I really, that one particular thing, Bob missed it entirely, but I got this out of it. Because friends were called to be sharpeners of each other. True friends bring things to the relationship so that they make their friends better people. I have a friend that's like that. Continually new and creative in meeting me day by day. Always giving me fresh insights into life. The last one for our purposes goes back a couple of chapters to chapter 14, verse 20. And there's no particular reason for this. It's just in the word processing arrangement of stuff. This one got cut and pasted the wrong way. Okay? I was trying to go sequentially, so I'm not making a point here. Understand? Proverbs 14, verse 20. Do not those who plot evil go astray, but those who plan what is good find love and faithfulness. True friends aren't secretive, but they promote the good for the common weal. Not the right text? 22. Proverbs 14:22. Sorry. Do not those who plot evil go astray, But those who correct the preacher will find love and faithfulness. Do you see, friends, how we need each other? I have a friend that does that. The book of Proverbs says there are five constant characteristics of friendship. They are dependable, they're constant. They're candid, they give truth in season. They are counsel givers, they give direction. They are contextual in the sense that they give their advice at the appropriate time. They don't dump it on people. They wait for the right moment. And finally, they're constructive. They build up people. Brothers and sisters, in a word, they're like Jesus. I have a friend. His name's Jesus. And Jesus does all these things. He's in the open. He promotes good. He brings things to my relationship with him. He's pleasant to be around. He corrects me within the context of his love relationship with me. He works toward peace. He's sensitive and appropriate in his use of humor. Sometimes he makes me laugh. Jesus is objective. He sees what's true. He's generous and not worried about money. Isn't that true? He's calm and cool in every situation. He's got pure motives. He listens well. He doesn't talk a whole lot. He's not quarrelsome. He's patient with me. He's in it with me for the long term. He's a close friend. He cares for me. He covers over my weaknesses. He's a team player. He's willing to give advice. He's willing ultimately to be careful in giving it to me. And he keeps my secrets. He keeps confidences. Is he your friend too? Father, this morning we want to thank you for the friendship we enjoy with you. It's amazing to us that you, the Creator God, the Holy One, would enjoy and seek out friendship with us creature rebels. From such a platform, such an environment, such a relationship, Lord, would you allow us to be friends to those desperately seeking to know you? Thank you for your encouragement this morning. I pray in Jesus' name.